Blog Talk Radio.
Good to see you. Good to hear from you guys. So, thank you.
things have been kind of heating up. I know that we're very concerned and keeping an eye on Detroit and what's going to happen to...
Well, across the country with these...
Tensions.
Yeah, I mean, you're dealing
absolutely
with Emden, I guess, right?
Right. You know, right now, you know, it's almost like a mini Detroit right here in Emden.
How are they...
So there's a public... Hmm? Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Yeah, how are they trying to justify this stuff, you know, with a, you know,
well, yeah, I can't say this is unexpected, what we see playing out in Detroit and what we see playing out in other states and other municipalities. And for all the professed talk and all the professed concern about the residents of Detroit, what this really is a, you know, further political power grab by the elite, by the entrenched political and corporate elite. You know, Detroit pensioners average around $19,000 a year with their retirement. You know, they're not the reason Detroit is in such great trouble. There are a lot of pathologies at work, you know, that have made things difficult for Detroit. And you guys know that as well as I do. But what's going on here is that you have a governor who just ran through right to work for less legislation in Detroit in the dark of night. And now he appointed a financial emergency financial overseer to basically declare bankruptcy and take over the city. And what the first thing they talk about is destroying the pension benefits that were hard-earned and hard-won over the years. So this is, you know, let's recognize this for what it is. You know, we have an economic downturn that was caused by the Wall Street fat cats and the corporate greed heads. And since that time, what we've been doing is continually attacking, assaulting, slashing benefits and bargaining rights of workers to justify, you know, the excess on the other side. And so that's what's tragically playing out in Detroit. You know, worker pensions are being blamed for something that really is not the cause of what's going on.
Now, do you have a similar situation where you are in Hamden? What's happening there?
Right. In Hamden, what's going on is, and this is, I think it's sort of illustrative of why the workers should never be blamed. There's a public hearing tonight. Hamden is debating whether or not to issue what's called pension obligation bonds to pay down on their unfunded liability. Hamden's pension plan is only 14% funded, which is just shocking, shocking. And what that means is administration after administration, legislative council after legislative council in Hamden have opted not to pay into a fund that they were obligated financially, morally, and legally to pay into. So Hamden's in some tough economic times, and to his credit, the new mayor, Scott Jackson, he wants to tackle this issue head-on by taking some steps, and one of them is issuing these pension obligation bonds. But, you know, my point is we represent some of the lowest paid workers, but vital workers in Hamden, librarians, school crossing guards, program administrators, you know, elder care workers for the social and human services. You know, they held up their end of the bargain. They've been paying their 6%, 7%, 8% toward their retirement. The employer opted not to for whatever reason, and yet the discussion is always, how do we kill pension benefits? You know, the workers are too expensive. And it's a bad paradigm, and it's an incorrect paradigm.
It's a horrible thing. You know?
Now, do the workers, are they able to get redress in court?
That's a great question. I mean, here in Hamden, we're not at that point. You know, nobody's pension benefit is being cut. You know, the discussion is how to get toward fully funding so that this problem is solved over the years. And it's just a conversation that should be happening in every city and town and every state government,
right.
But it shouldn't be based on the premise that the workers are at fault. Now, Detroit is going to, you know, be, it could get very ugly. for the workers who are very poor, you know, who are barely in the middle class. So we have to see how this will all play out. Because you asked, I don't, you know, it's very difficult. There are powerful private corporations that went bankrupt, you know, Bethlehem Steel back in the 80s, and they basically destroyed the pension benefit of their retirees. You know, they went bankrupt and just, you know, private sector companies, and said, we're done. We're not going to make good on the obligation. So who knows how this plays out.
But I think Bain was responsible for bankrupting many companies. And
Bain Capital, yeah.
Capitalists like that. And borrowing against their funds and pensions and everything else.
Exactly. That's why I say the real story in Detroit and other cities and towns isn't, you know, unionized workers having the audacity to negotiate for pensions and health care. The real story is this, you know, gangster capitalism that's overtaken our country and allowed, you know, the very few and privileged to destroy a middle-class livelihood for the many. You know, that's what's going on here. You just nailed it. It's, you know, corporations with all their leveraging, all their complicated transactions, and what they do is they screw the workers, they screw the communities. Tom Foley, who wants to run for governor of Connecticut again, you know, he bought plants and put people out of work down south. This is the model. People make money by bringing greater misery to our communities.
Yeah, but you know,
and that's what's happening.
I you know, Malloy hasn't been any wonder dog either, I'll tell you.
Let me defend him on one thing, though, because since we're talking about pensions, Malloy pushed through legislation a year ago to fully fund the state pension plan, which was woefully underfunded during, you know, the Roland and Rell administrations, the Republican administrations of Roland and Rell. So Malloy actually pushed forward the legislation to increase the annual required contribution, what's called the ARC, so that Connecticut's pension fund liability is expected to be taken care of around 2025, 2028. So, you know, to his credit, he saw that problem too and tackled it. And, you know, pensions are good things. Pensions are critical to economic growth and vitality. So, you know, I will defend him on that.
Well, that is a good thing, and I'm glad to hear it.
What did you think of, I don't know if you got Obama's speech today, which was, you know.
I only heard excerpts. Yeah, what did you think?
You got some excerpts, too. I got an excerpt today, and it was really silly. Yeah.
Well, he's running away from D.C. because.
he really is. And, I mean, He has been saying the same thing for the last, 5 years? And nothing's happened, and he's just crushed the middle class. He's constantly been kissing the all of his banker cronies. I have no idea what he's doing and what he's coming out with. Oh, we got to build a middle class. Let's build a middle class. Mm-hmm. I happened to see part of it on C-SPAN tonight, and I mean, everybody in that audience looked like they wanted to jump the guy. You know what I mean? Nobody smiled. Nobody looked like nobody in the whole audience believed a word he was saying. And, you know.
Well, his supporters have deserted him. And we read something last night that we didn't read it.
All of his supporters have really left him.
It was an audio piece that we played, and it was a really a good commentary by Cornel West.
I like him, yeah.
So do I. And he was really very critical of Obama, very critical.
Yeah.
And he was right on.
He called him a corporatist. He called him a fascist and a corporatist. And he said, that's what the guy is. He said, you can't deny it. And he said, the guy doesn't have any moral fortitude. He said, he's got no moral fiber because he says, no matter what he says, he says he goes out and kills 221 kids on a drone, murdering them with drones, assassinating American citizens. He says all of his friends. He says, Obama has no, he says, you and I are not Obama's friends. I said, Obama's friends are all, you know, elite. He said, they're all wealth bankers. He says, don't think for 1 minute that Martin Luther King, he says, would ever be invited to
the Million Man
March.
And Cornel West didn't expect to be invited either.
He's not invited either.
I was going to say, I think he should not plan on any invitations, too. You're not. There's a lot of merit to what you're saying, particularly, you know, if you watch the Frontline series, the three-part series they had on the financial meltdown, and clearly, you know, both parties are captive to the powerful financial interest. One thing, you know, that, you know, Obama, with regard to Obama and not being able to get things done, I mean, that, you know, that is the result of the Republican Congress that made a decision not to cooperate on anything, and to the point where they pushed on the sequester, and, you know, programs are being cut, services are being cut, and they're protecting the same people who want to put Detroit into bankruptcy and take away people's pensions and bargaining rights. You know, it's all connected. And, you know, the Republicans are fronting for these people. You know, they refuse to do anything in Congress, and the Democrats aren't strong enough to fight that. So, you know, I think you can't put it all on Obama's doorstep. You know, I think that the, like I said, Republican leadership is using their kind of Tea Party base and their corporate base to stop any progress.
I agree with you, but I think what the problem is goes right back to his own credibility. I mean, he had some credibility.
Oh, he
fighting
a lot of goodwill.
But
well,
now,
you know, it's interesting. He's got like 2 years to try to fix it. And, you know, it's tough. You're in the midterm of the second, approaching the midterm of the second term. And, you know, it's going to be hard. But again, you know.
Yeah, he's got about four or five major scandals that he's got to kind of.
He's up against it.
I don't know.
But I wanted to mention the Teamsters. And,
I was wondering what
you thought about this, Leo.
Because they are protesting now that you know, Obamacare is going to kill their own programs. Okay, it's their own health care.
Yeah.
And
I saw that. Yeah.
You see that? Do you see that in AFSCME and their health care programs?
Right.
I don't know.
Again, I kind of, you know, there are unions, obviously, including, you know, our own, that have had, you know, we have concerns. And we, overall, our position, AFSCME's position, was to support the legislation because nothing would have happened otherwise. And there are some really good components, from the health insurance exchanges to the getting rid of pre-existing circumstances. And so, you know, the bill was a start. The problem is that, you know, the plan could conceivably, the law could conceivably put what's called, you know, a tax on higher benefit plans. And that's part of where the concern, because obviously we negotiate health care for our members, and those tend to be better benefits. All of this good, I will say this much, and this isn't pointing a finger at anybody other than, you know, the usual people we're getting mad at. But, you know, had we just done health care for all, had we done universal health care based on the Medicare model, you know, we wouldn't have to have this conversation.
That's right.
Yeah,
so, you know, Democrats, Republicans alike, you know, but mostly Republicans are, you know, the Republicans don't want to do anything. They want to repeal Obamacare. They want to make it as weak as possible. The Democrats don't have solid enough footing and confidence and belief in this stuff to fight for it. And, you know, if we had a Medicare model for every American citizen, I just think we'd be having a different conversation.
I agree with you.
And it would be such a wonderful thing, I believe.
You know, the only guy...
Right, but that is one of the problems for the unions, is that, you know, in 2018, it could become very... it could increase the... There could be what amounts to a tax on these benefits on plans that could be punitive to employers. So, you know, we're going to have to keep an eye on it and see what happens. But rather than get rid of it, I'd rather fix it.
Yeah. Is that the piece that the Teamsters are concerned about?
I believe that's one of their concerns. Yep, absolutely.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah,
I just wanted to be clear about that. Yeah, they had several.
There are several other there are other pieces too, but that's one of them, and that's going to be a concern for us because we represent public employees, obviously.
Right.
And you know, as municipalities and state governments get stretched, if they're looking at an additional kind of tax, you know, they'll either seek to reduce benefits or take benefits away from workers or do something that would sort of become punitive. So we'll have to keep an eye on it.
Well, do you think that what do you see for unions in the next year, or even, you know, do you see more of the same, or do you see us getting any stronger, or what do you see
Darn good question.
Well, yeah.
I see us fighting, and I don't mean that in, you know, the best way possible. We are under attack. You know,
we're being scapegoated, blamed.
We're seeing Republican governors like Snyder in Michigan push through legislation. The economic downturn there's still plenty of residual effects. So, you know, I think we're in this mode of trying both to, you know, retrench and to come out of the foxhole and fight harder. And, you know, we're determined to do that. We're determined to do that because, you know, that's just about the unions. As we get weakened, the whole economy for the middle class weakens. So the stakes are pretty high.
Very, very high.
Yeah.
We're seeing it. We're getting nervous.
Yeah.
I know you're out there fighting, and we appreciate that.
Yeah, it was great to talk to you. I have to get back into the hearing, but thanks for letting me vent.
For taking some time to talk with us and help us understand some of these issues.
Yeah.
Good.
And we look forward to hearing more about the hearing next time we talk.
Yeah.
Good. We'll talk soon.
Okay.
Just a couple of weeks.
All right. Thanks, Dad.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Thanks, Dad.
Very good.
Thanks, Lyle. Take care.
That was Larry Dorman.
Public Affairs Coordinator for AFSCME Union Council 4 in New Britain, Connecticut.
Yeah. And
That was helpful. That was
Larry always
clarifies things for us. I think the thing that's so frustrating is when you hear something on the mainstream media about pensions in Detroit, they never really tell you the issues or what the problems are.
No, they don't specify it. They
make you think it's the burden of the pensions that's destroying the city.
That's exactly what
when there's
they are.
So many other things.
Yeah, I mean,
that,
it's like poor investments and poor leadership.
Poor leadership.
Well, like, it's like
a
Larry.
Companies that have bankrupted
Exactly. It's like Larry was talking about Hamden, you know, in Connecticut here, this small town. But, you know, it turns out they've only got 14% of the pensions funded, okay? But they neglected to fund it.
The politicians,
the mayors, and so on and so forth, neglected to put any money aside to fund those pensions. Like, oh, they're retired, they don't care.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, what?
And they put it somewhere else that makes them look good.
Yeah, or you know, they put it into giving some credit, tax credit to somebody to come into the town and build another mall.
Promise these companies tax credits, and then the company pulls up stakes and leaves
or there's graft, you know.
Well,
they
put no conditions on these tax credits.
No.
None.
And so the people come in and they walk away and they don't, you know, they
shrug their shoulders. We're going to South Carolina.
Yeah,
we only have to pay our workforce.
Exactly. So it's
$6
like
an hour with no benefits.
South Carolina. In fact, there's an article we want to read tonight. I think it's a good time to maybe take a little music break. There's an article we want to read tonight from the AFL-CIO blog about North Carolina being the very worst union state in the country.
Really?
Oh, yeah. And, I mean, how bad they really are as far as, you got to remember, they were the quintessential state for the garment workers, okay? And then the garment workers, all right, they couldn't undercut China and Bangladesh and Honduras and all that. You know, as soon as NAFTA came in and the free trade, you know, South Carolina lost all of its jobs,
mm-hmm.
all right? And now they're trying to attract jobs by paying people peanuts, you know? Below minimum wage, even, you know, and it's like it's a horrible state to, for any kind of, you know, any kind of economic recovery, you know, if you will.
If you don't have money, you can't spend it.
Yeah.
You know, and that's part of the economic recovery. You know, if these businesses are not creating jobs, do what they did in the Depression. The state and the federal government need to create jobs. They need to do things like build roads. Our infrastructure is falling apart. Why can't we fix it? You know, it just makes a lot of good sense. And people are employed, and then they have money, and they spend it, which stimulates the economy.
Yeah. Government gets a big fat F for tackling unemployment. Trade union leaders from G20 countries are meeting this week at the labor... that was July 18th, so that was last week. Labor 20 summit in Moscow to tackle the world's biggest problems, including rising unemployment, alarming levels of youth unemployment, and overall lack of jobs. And these are governments all around the world
are experiencing the same thing.
That's right, that are falling apart. And it says here that 80% of respondents to the ITUC Global Poll 2013 say their government has failed to effectively tackle unemployment in their country. 86% of respondents want tax evasion to stop, and 80% also are open to raising taxes for large corporations. 99% of respondents favor laws that protect the right to strike. 97% favor in the United States. 91% of respondents favor the right to collective bargaining. 79% favor in the United States. 91% of respondents favor laws that protect the right to join union. 80% in the United States. I'm surprised the United States is so
backward.
Backward, yeah. In a national poll.
Those are those blue-collar Republicans.
I'm just going to read a result of this global poll, which is kind of interesting.
Mm. I thought you just did.
Yeah, but there's more to it. You can go to let's see, the ITUC Global Poll 2013. You can go into that and it'll probably pull it up. Meeting Moscow, July 9, 2013. But it says government has failed to tackle unemployment. Government prioritizes business interests. These are the contents of a table of contents. Job creation and policy agenda. Very strong support for social protection for worker protection laws provide inadequate protection. Global call for labor laws, right? And global call for labor laws. I'm curious about that.
Well, it'd be like what happened in Bangladesh.
To
have good working conditions for all. You know, that's really important. You know, and that's what I was reading about in the Walmart shipping place.
That's right.
The working conditions were abhorrent.
Yeah, and it's
terrible.
Yeah.
Unsafe drinking water in the United States for people working.
I know. Is this a sick situation?
People locked in tractor trailers and they can't get out?
Yeah. It's crazy.
I mean, people are so desperate for a job that they'll accept a job like that.
That's right.
Now, where is the occupation on safety? OSHA, aren't they supposed to...
number one, they have to get somebody to complain.
People are afraid.
People are afraid to complain. or they don't even know how to provide. They don't even know how. So, you know, you have those real problems. The growing threat of a currency war could derail global economic recovery. China has long been known as the globe's biggest currency manipulator. While China undervalues its currency, the yuan or the renminbi, I don't even know the name of that, renminbi.
That's the name of their currency?
So.
Oh.
And that raises the price of U.S. exports and suppresses the price of Chinese imports into the United States. Well, we've done that all along. We've done that, too. We played that game like crazy.
Yeah, well, all countries do.
The artificial price advantage is a major factor that encourages U.S. businesses to shut down operations here and manufacture in China instead, costing the U.S. millions of manufacturing jobs and is a major reason for the massive U.S. trade deficit. Well, I want to believe that, all right, but I know that our government has played footsies with it with our dollars always, you know. Kelly, but now, writes AFL-CIO Senior Economic Policy Advisor Tom Kelly, other nations are pursuing policies with similar consequences, and that threatens to launch a global currency war. Kelly writes that nations must act together to coordinate currency exchange rates to avoid a currency war that would undermine economic recovery and increase the likelihood of stagnation. The undeniable problem is exchange rate devaluation benefits the devaluing country at the expense of others, and from a global standpoint, it can easily become a case of robbing Peter to pay Paul. You can read this full article here. There's a full article here for this. But it says, earlier this year, a report from the Economic Policy Institute found that if the United States implemented trade policies to end currency manipulation, especially by China, not only would that reduce the U.S. trade deficit by $190 billion to $400 billion over 3 years, it would be a major first step in reviving the nation's manufacturing sector and creating up to 4.7 million jobs. Imagine that?
Hmm.
And it says, currently there is a bipartisan legislation in the Senate and House that would crack down on currency exchange manipulation. The AFL-CIO President Richard Trumka says, if the legislation were approved, it would send an important message that this nation will no longer tolerate currency manipulation by other governments. And Trumka says, this wrongful and unfair practice distorts the global economy and disadvantages countries like the United States that follow international trade rules. And the growth of these illegal actions has cost far too many jobs over the past several years. So, you know, This is a problem, an ongoing problem that, you know, we have a tendency to overlook.
Mm-hmm.
Overlook, right? So, anyway, I will, let's see, what do I need here? Low-wage workers see the biggest drop in real wages. I'm going to have every time.
Yeah, that looks like a good one. Very difficult for people to make it today. And this is by Mike Hall. Many of us and our families have felt the pinch of stagnant wages during the past several years. And a new study shows that while real wages, adjusted for inflation, fell by 2.8% across the board between 2009 and 2012, low and middle wage workers, especially women, took the brunt of the hit. The study by the National Employment Labor Project finds that real wages for 5 of the 10 largest low-wage job categories, restaurant cooks, food preparation workers, home health aides, personal care aides, and housekeepers, experienced a drop of 5% or more. Women make up nearly two-thirds of all minimum wage workers and dominate the categories hit the hardest. They make up between 83% and 87% of home health and personal care workers, 85% of maids and housekeepers, and 70% of food service workers. The drop in wages came at the same time that productivity increased by 4.2%. says NELP Executive Director Christine Owens. Corporations are reaping the financial benefits of an increasingly productive workforce, but the recent decline in wages shows that these gains are not being shared with the people that actually do the work. For the 30 years prior to the recession, says Owens, real wage gains and income growth accrued primarily to those at the very top, while low-wage earners experienced stagnant or declining wages. While persistent high unemployment likely explains some of the recent decline in real wages, recent losses are part of an alarming trend toward greater inequality and a shrinking share of the economic pie going to those at the bottom. The study finds that an eroding minimum wage, U.S. tax and trade policies that reward companies for shipping profits and jobs abroad, and the decline in union membership play roles in this inequality. The minimum wage has been stuck at $7.25 an hour since 2009. If the minimum wage had kept pace with inflation since its real value high in the 1960s, it would currently be $10.71 an hour. President Obama has proposed raising the minimum wage to $9 an hour and pegging it to inflation. If Congress acts on the proposal of Tom Harkin and George Miller to raise the minimum wage to $10.20 an hour, the Economic Policy Institute estimates that about 30 million workers would see a rise in pay. Overall, in almost 70 different occupations, half of the workers make less than $10.20 an hour, including food preparation workers, childcare workers, maids, hotel desk clerks, personal care aides, and cashiers. The same workers who have seen the biggest drop in wages. So not surprisingly, almost 56% of the workers who would get raises are women. Because the average affected worker earns about half of his or her family's income, this means a boost to American families' income. EPI estimates families' income would go up by a combined $51.5 billion, which AFL-CIO economics expert William Spriggs, this is what he says, would mean more revenue for Social Security Trust Fund, fewer dollars for the earned income tax credit, fewer people getting food assistance. That is why this is so popular with the American public. The U.S. public believes work should pay and workers should be able to sustain themselves. That is why 19 states plus the District of Columbia have local minimum wage laws above the federal minimum wage. The AFL-CIO has also called for an end to tax breaks for companies that offshore American jobs to strengthen the rates of workers to form unions and bargain collectively. I think that's important.
Sure. So let's take a little quick break here. And
we're going to shift to some other news?
Yeah. We'll continue that, but I think it's time to take a little, not be a bad idea. Let's take a little break, and we'll be back in a couple minutes.
Thank you.
Virbeck. And
Tuesday, tax trade-off. Cuts to medical research versus tax breaks. Uninflated CEO pay. This post was originally appeared at Americans for Tax Fairness, and this is by William Rice. Doctors work hard to find medical options for their patients. Corporations work hard to award stock options to their top executives. Which effort would you like your tax dollars to support? The National Institutes of Health funds research on cancer, Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, and many other serious diseases. The across-the-board budget cuts, known as the sequester, have impaired the National Institute of Health's ability to foster hope and find cures. The 2013 budget cut, $2.5 billion. Huge corporations shower their CEOs with stock options and often make up the bulk of their millions of dollars of annual compensation. But because of loopholes in the law, companies get tax windfalls because they are allowed to deduct more from their taxes than these options are worth, according to the normal accounting standards. Annual tax break, $2.5 billion. So who would you rather support?
Good question. Good question.
The doctors and the research or these bloated executives?
Oh, boy. Here's something really interesting. We always like to mention stuff. We always like to do union news on Wednesday night. But we also kind of like to put a little health and environmental stuff in with that. Only because there's so much going on. And
so many people, you know, Leo and I are in our late middle age.
We're in early middle age.
And so many people around us are ill.
Yes.
And we
aren't in the best of shape, and for reasons that are, you know, because of the stuff that we're eating, because of the food and the medicines and the crap that we're being forced to believe is good for us, is not. And this is an article I just thought should be mentioned. It says yet another Frankenfood Pandora's box.
Oh,
the
boy.
Majority of supplements are now laced with GMOs. Oh my God. Just when you thought it couldn't come, just when you thought it couldn't become much worse on the GMO front, information has surfaced indicating supplements often contain genetically modified organisms. Favorites like B complex, vitamin C, E, D, and particularly risky. Paradoxically, it is believed that a majority of ACAI, and resveratrol products harbor GM material as well. With genetically modified food, toxic pesticides and harmful pathogens are consumed in each and every bite. These contaminants are not simply sprayed externally. They have been engineered right into the plant and into our plate. And now health supplements have been contaminated with genetically modified material from corn, soy, cottonseed, and biotechnical manufacturing practices. That's pretty frightening, folks. I mean, when you think that, you know, your health supplements are being invaded by genetically modified organisms, I mean, there's nothing safe here, you know. It's really quite frightening. And I want to get to the rest of this article here. Taking a second for it to come up. But this is something that Lila and I are very, very active in trying to research and trying to bring forth to our audiences, you know, about genetically modified food and how frightening it really is and how invasive it is. And, of course, with Monsanto, you know, being the most criminal corporation in the world, you know, it's really a problem. So, for some reason, this article does not want to
pop up.
Yeah, it's having
what is the article?
Oh,
I'm sorry,
I didn't
miss it.
It's on Frankenfood, on the supplements.
Oh. Yeah, you were saying that the supplements have GMOs.
Yeah, and it's really quite frightening, actually. But for some reason,
because they're presenting
not,
themselves as something really healthy, and you find out,
Boy,
that took a long time to come up, didn't it?
Some of these do take a while.
Wake up from Wake Up World?
Wake Up World, yeah.
I never heard of that site.
Yeah, and hang on one second, this is taking a little more time to generate. Some sites are just too, there's too much stuff on them, you know, too many pictures and stuff like that, it takes forever. But when, with genetically modified food, toxic pesticides, and harmful pathogens are consumed in each and every bite. These contaminants are not simply sprayed externally. They have been engineered right into the plant and into your plate. And now healthy supplements have been contaminated with genetically modified material from corn, soy, cottonseed, and biotechnical manufacturing practices. The dirty six, some vitamins are more likely than others to contain GMOs.
What would that be?
Well, through production methods, B and C vitamins, as well as beta-carotene, precursor to vitamin A, are high on the list of GMO and contaminated supplements. Ascorbic acid, vitamin C, is often derived from corn, while A and B vitamins are manufactured with a biotechnical process using genetically modified microorganisms. Vitamin E is produced from a soybeans or cottonseed. Unfortunately, fat solubles
like B and K
are commonly attached to carrier molecules made from starch, glucose, or maltodextrin, all of which are likely derived from GM corn, our sources such as corn and sugar beets. Bearing in mind, in 85% of corn, 91% of soybeans, and 88% of cotton grown in the U.S. are genetically modified. There is a very good chance GMOs have been made their way into your supplements.
Okay.
Hidden GMO poisons in ACIA, or ACAA, and resveratrol.
I don't know what that is.
ACAA is famously known as a potent Amazonian superfruit, while grape-derived resveratrol is a mighty anti-aging and longevity tonic. Both contain vast amounts of powerful antioxidants that encourage vibrant health. While regrettably, it is estimated that 90% of these supplements contain genetically modified material due to magnesium stearate content. Magnesium stearate seems like a fairly innocuous substance. It is used as an anti-caking agent and emulsifier in manufacturing. However, upon closer inspection, magnesium stearate is predominantly made from conventional soy, corn, or animal fat, three prime sources of genetically modified organisms. If magnesium stearate is present, so are genetically modified organisms, unless they're sourced organically.
Do not despair. Several supplement companies have already adopted 100% organic ingredients. According to Jeffrey Smith, director of the Institute for Responsible Technology, if a food or supplement is certified organic, it cannot contain GM ingredients. Some are even verified through the Non-GMO Project. For a list of validated brands, visit
non-gmoproject.org,
and you can get a list of the validated
brands. The battle continues for safe food now more than ever, it's crucial to stay vigilant and informed. And the non-GMO project, in fact, I'm going to mark that here, too.
I think that's important.
I thought I had at one time bookmarked it, but I don't remember saying it. And, I suggest anybody listening to this show might also bookmark or go to non-GMO project, okay?
And
bookmark it like I'm doing right this minute. So that,
it's a very clear website here.
Well, it looks like it, but
yeah.
let's see.
They have a monthly newsletter you can sign up for. You can find the non-GMO choices. Let's go to that, see what kind of list they have.
It's a very informative site, I guess. So let's just go to that.
You can get alternative baby products, baby food and infant formula, beverages, body care. So all of the ones that are non-GMO, vitamins and supplements is a category, pet products.
Let's go to vitamins and supplements. Since we're on that subject, I'll just say what some of them are.
Yeah.
So that maybe we can get some idea. Barleans, organic flax oil. Barleans.
Canfo, natural products.
Chosen food.
Coriander.
Chia seeds and noble cactus, veranda, coral, and
anti-aging company, 200% health. Is that what it says? 200% healthy.
Nose to brain oil.
Essential living foods.
Flora.
Fungi perfect.
Fungi perfect eye.
Garden of life. Is that say glug?
Glucolift.
Oh, good. You're good at this. So glucose tablet cherries.
Yeah. Kind of a capture. Looks like a capture thing. Glucolift. Golazo. Colora. Growing naturals. Herbal zap.
Non-GMO project.
Lekithos. Lekithos.
Hemp foods and oils from Manitoba Harvest. Mega food.
Can't read that one. MRM.
Metabolic response modifiers.
Now foods.
Natural vitality. Naturally Splendid Enterprises Limited.
Hemp protein powder. Natural built cholera tablets.
Navitas Natural.
There's
a whole long list. But you can check and see if what you're purchasing is on the list.
Yeah. You know, it's terrible when you think about it. I'm looking at this stuff, but I don't recognize any of these.
I do a couple of them, yeah.
Yeah, I guess we're...
Not many, though.
Well, we don't really buy this kind of stuff that much, you know?
No, we try to get most of our vitamins from food.
Right. Well, yeah, we try to do food, you know, organic food, or you know, whatever we can. As far as supplements,
we don't really take that many supplements, but we do take some.
Yeah, we've been taking turmeric lately. I got organic turmeric, which is good for just about everything that ails you. So let's see here. Okay, we got about 5 minutes left. Let's go to. So that was a good article, I thought.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't you?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, so.
And this is a pretty good website, Wake Up World. I'd never heard of it before, so that's one to try to remember. Let's see what else is going on. Well, here's an interesting one. Emails show Orrin's firm planned bankruptcy of Detroit from the start.
Yeah, so it says, emergency manager Kevin Orr and members of his former law firm discussed the potential of Orr, that's O-R-R, taking the job and filing a Detroit bankruptcy weeks before he was formally appointed. Emails obtained through a court order show.
Union activist Robert Davis distributed a snippet of the January and February correspondence between the Jones Day firm or an aide for Governor Rick Snyder's office during a press conference Monday at the AFSCME Hall in downtown Detroit. Snyder appointed Orr as an emergency manager in March. "It's an outgoing slap in the face to the citizens of the city of Detroit," Davis said of the emails. "It clearly indicates from day one the decision to seek bankruptcy was already made."
Yeah, back in March.
Let's get the rest of this. Takes a minute to come up, folks. It's working.
Yeah.
It's buffering.
It's buffering.
Is from the Detroit News,
yeah.
The Metro and State, Wayne
yeah.
County.
So, hang on a second. So it appears that they started this quite a while ago.
It's an outright slap in the face to the citizens of Detroit.
Yeah.
We read that.
The emails are the latest batch released by Davis, who obtained them through a lawsuit seeking to nullify Orr's appointment. An Ingram County Circuit Court judge is expected to rule Wednesday on whether the case will go to trial, he said. Orr spokesman Bill Noling calling Davis's allegation baseless, noting the emails show nothing more than proper due diligence.
"The notion that a Chapter 9 filing was a foregone conclusion is absurd," Dowling said in a release statement. "Kevin Orr held more than 100 meetings with creditors, stakeholders, and unions in the last 3 months before deciding that the best course for restructuring the city was to seek federal bankruptcy protection."
In one January 31st email, a Jones Day attorney, Daniel Moss, tells Orr that the ideal scenario for Detroit would be for Snyder and Detroit Mayor Dave Bing to agree that the best option is simply to go through an orderly Chapter 9.
"This avoids an unnecessary political fight over the scope and authority of any appointed emergency manager, and moreover, moves the ball forward on setting Detroit on the right track," Moss wrote on January 31st.
Wow.
The emails also include a summary sent to Orr from Snyder aide Richard Baird detailing a partnership prepared by Bing, pledging cooperation and urging others to be part of the solution. Bing, in a statement released Monday, said he's been very vocal about being against an emergency manager.
"I did not cut any type of secret deal with Lansing," Bing said, "when it became obvious that Lansing had made the decision to bring in an emergency manager. I thought the best choice was for the city to work in partnership with Lansing to protect the interests of the citizens of Detroit." And, so that record speaks for itself. All the
laws have been closely followed,
yeah.
She said in an email. "Governor Snyder acted to do everything possible to avoid the need for an emergency manager for the city of Detroit in the first place, and then to avoid the need for bankruptcy filing. Davis is under federal indictment in a separate matter for allegedly stealing $125,000 from Highland Park Schools." Oh, my God.
So, there you go.
The beat goes on.
The beat goes on. Crooks.
Yep.
Oh, crooks.
And we're just about to the end of our show.
Oh, here's one.
It's 8:59.
New cholesterol drug is guaranteed to prematurely kill.
Oh, my God.
Big pharma, well-organized crime. 2004, U.S. government National Cholesterol Education Program panel advised those at risk for heart disease to attempt to reduce their cholesterol to less than 100. Just trying to get to where this...
Or even less to 70 if you're high risk. Prior to this, 100 of them. In order to obtain incredibly low LDL levels, now recommended, you typically have to take cholesterol-lowering statin drugs, and sometimes two or three of them in combination. Now a new class of cholesterol drug known as PCK9 inhibitors promises to reduce LDL cholesterol levels to previously unheard lows. Indeed, this type of drug can drop your level below 50. My prediction? The drugs will absolutely kill people, not just some, but many. I cannot warn you against this terrible idea enough. While many worry that their cholesterol is too high, few give any thought at all to the damage that can result if your cholesterol is too low.
So to stay away from the statin drugs and the PCSK9 inhibitors. And that's the end of our show, folks. I want to thank everybody who joined us tonight. And we thank Larry Darman for being with us.
Yep,
and,
we sure do.
You know, and we want to ask you to please join me tomorrow night. Thanks.
And I'll talk to you next week, folks. Have a great weekend.
Good night, everybody.
And a great rest of the week. Good night.